stuff to get there.
This is new stuff, so I...
taking the dual of this is a little grueling. We probably need to spend a little bit of time talking about taking psychopharmacology duals, because it's just a bit of technology that you need that is not quite trivial. But let me just write the result for this. Oh boy, that's fairly hairy.
Are we using the mechanophormal dual then? The complex dual instead of the Hodge dual?
Well,
or not
yet? That's what I'm leading up to here. I'm not sure I've quite got. If we use the Hodge dual, I think this actually works out all right. But the converse is different. Boundary operator. I really like this. I'm not sure if I've written it down. It gets long. I don't have it. All right. So, in general, the dual of a two form. The Hodge dual of the two forms in bi-conformal space. You get star D star. Not the Hodge dual of the two forms, but using the Hodge dual. Star D star F is a long string of stuff here. What do we get? F, A, B, comma, A, plus F, A, B, comma, A, minus F, A, C, comma, C, and there's a metric in the Hodge dual. You need a metric, and it's going to be this HAB. I'm not sure what metric I was thinking of when I did this calculation of the dual. This was some while back, so this may not be quite the way I do it now. But, let's see, we have this term, then we have FAB, GAC, C, This is the general case, and the case we need is much simpler than this. I took F to be F, A, B, D, X, A, which D, X, D. plus F A B D Y A D X D plus a half F A B F D Y A wedge D Y B, where these three things are different. Okay? Not, we can't raise and lower into these here because I'm using the same symbol for three different things. You know, I should probably put a tilde here and a double tilde there or something. Or call them F, G, and H or anything like that would be better.
It's like the omegas, right?
Yeah. Too many omegas, too many F's. Now we've got too many F's. So when you see an FAB down in this formula, you know, it's different than FAB mix or FAB up. Those are three different objects. I should have started transcribing this over into F, G, and H or something. That's why they're all these explicit metrics. And then we have F, A, B, but if we lower A, B, 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 D, and then take a Y derivative, then that gives some more DX, D stuff. And then there's some DY stuff. F, D, A, D, F, A, B, B, plus F, A, B, G, B, G, 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 Y, A. Why is this? It seems funny.
When you have a comma down, is that a...
That would be an X derivative, and a comma up
the
is
y
derivative.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see, I'm mistrusting this, however, because if I was really making this assumption when I computed this, then I should get something that's symmetric in the X's and Y. But I'm only getting two Y terms and I'm getting all these. So something, I made some assumption that I'm not remembering. The thing is that the metric that I'm using, I bet I'm assuming the metric is y dependent. So you pick up a lot of y derivatives of the metric, the metric on the y space allows you to do a whole lot of y derivatives here. But if the metric is only y dependent, not x dependent, then you don't get corresponding x derivatives, so the dy stuff is smaller. I think that's what happened. I think I was assuming that this metric depended only on y. And that's using those original x and y coordinates. So this should probably be done again for a more general space.
Going back over your question.
Yeah.
The minus one half, is that a U? U alpha?
Oh, that would be.
B, okay.
It's, yeah. It was a shakily drawn B.
So it's not quite symmetric then, right? Because you don't have this, you don't have a corresponding U term over here in the A. So.
Okay. So the idea was that for this calculation, I was going to take a general flat by conformal space that has this y dependent piece, right? Remember, the Kostadter form had that HAB in it, and that HAB only depended on y. So if you take that as the metric, so the full y conformal metric is being taken here as 0, Kronecker, B, and H, what would it be? It's probably HAB. But something like that. This depends only on the y coordinate. So I'm assuming that metric when I did this calculation. And that's why these aren't balanced between x and y. So, I did this carefully, so that's if the right answer, given that assumption, but of course now we know that's not quite the right assumption to make. But
they got to work this out.
Okay, so we can do this again. I'll give it for homework. But you know, one thing to notice here is, you know, first off, this is an awful mess. You know, it's got this metric dependence all over the place. Well, if what we're computing is stardy star of this thing, it's not actually so bad because dA and this F alpha beta here, they only depend on x, right? They're the original f over here. So they only depend on x. This thing only depends on x. The only b dependence is that explicit linear b dependence right there. So when we put those coefficients in, all right, so let's see, this, all of that, including that minus sign, is the f beta mu, right, that goes up here, the mixed one. Here, this becomes the components of this, there's the f alpha beta, you know, that depends on x. This mixed term, the mixed term depends on x and y, or u and v. And then this term, that is the f up, and that one only depends on x, or now u. So it's not actually so bad to work that out. A lot of terms drop out. You know, it simplifies a great deal. Not enough. It doesn't simplify enough because you've got a lot of metrics in there. And if you instead use the hunch, the symplectic dual, then we get a whole different set of formulas. Star D star F isn't nearly so messy, for one thing. Because, you know, you can't raise and lower indices quite the same way. I mean, you don't get, you're not introducing new functions when you raise and lower indices because you're using a symplectic form, which is a constant. Right? It's just antisymmetric chronickers. So the raising and lowering of indices is not introducing a whole bunch more Y dependence like that metric does.
Would it be of any value instead of doing this? So you're using the x's and the y's, right? So with this metric up here at the bottom, right? This is an x and a.
It probably laid out what I'm using in here. The cosine form is the yy minus the half y squared thing, right? So it'll be the inner product of the dy's that have that gab, and I'm assuming that gab is this y-dependent thing. I'm not confused that.
Would it have been better to use the regular Hodge tool, but using the other metric, like HAB up, or in the minus, or sorry, the HAB on one part and the minus HAB on the other side?
Yeah, it'd be very different, right? Yeah, well,
would
you know,
have been
I mean, in general, you could work this out with a general metric. And you can see how messy it's going to get. You get a lot of terms, because, you know, at some point, you know, the thing is, with the metric, you know, you can, you know, you turn, you can put the indices in any position. So when you have a dx term, okay, you need the free index down. Well, you can get it there by using metrics. And so you end up with a lot of terms every time. And that's really why this gets so messy, and it'd be even messier with a general metric. You know, if you had functional octagonal terms, of course it'd be even worse. You know, you'd multiply by 4 the number of terms here, undoubtedly. It's okay. It's a well-defined thing. You know, you could calculate it if you wanted it or needed it. But this was calculated in a way that I wouldn't do it now. This is in the x and y coordinates, and I was careful, but I was in those coordinates. So I don't think that the way to compute this tool is to change coordinates. Take this formula and change coordinates. You would be, so that would not be the way to do it.
Okay.
Just recompute it with the right metric. You have the metric in the coordinates that you want. But the thing is, the Hodge dual is so much simpler. The funny thing is that the Hodge dual has some really interesting sign differences from the Hodge dual. And the Hilly place is like really different. There's a lot more symmetry. And it's not yet totally clear what all that symmetry means. You always have more symmetry on a phase space than you have on a configuration space. That's not surprising. But it turns out that the field equations you get are invariant not only under the addition of a gradient to the potential, you can also add star d star of an arbitrary two form to A, and it preserves the form of the field equation, which is a very weird thing to be able to do. It allows there to be a very large number of different forms for the potential. So this is one form that you can get for the potential, but you know there are quite a number of other terms you can write here that actually work. So we don't use that Hodge dual. Let's see. You know, if we were to take this and substitute in, it's probably too messy to contemplate. Just quickly, looking at what happens. Okay, a term like this, that's going to go away because it's a y derivative of f, and f only depends on x. Right? Here, all right, that one stays, but, you know, that's the thing you expect to show up as j, right? That's the divergence of... that's the cross term. So that's this term. Well, what's that look like? It's a z alpha, f alpha beta, comma mu, and then that's what I call the mixed term here, so I'm going to take a comma beta on that. And that I can write as z alpha, f alpha beta. I can interchange the order of those partial derivatives, beta mu. So this becomes b alpha, that's just j alpha comma mu. So it depends on, that's a term that will just depend on the current. Right, this is a y derivative of that same thing. So let's see, what did I say? This ends up looking like b alpha j alpha comma mu, or b, I guess. I'm mixing Greek and Latin here, sorry. This is a y derivative, as you know, it would have been a y there. So I just get f, let's see, what's it going to be? That's just a J. To begin with a G. Then a term like this, you know, well, there's all kinds of Y dependence in that G. There's all kinds of Y dependence in that G. So those terms, yeah, what they are probably connections. You know, the derivatives of the metric are going to give something like a connection. So it probably turns this into a covariant derivative with respect to that metric. It has to be doing that. So when we get derivatives of the metric, those are probably also connections, some sort of covariant derivative. It's y derivative, so again, since f only depends on x, this is just going to give derivatives of the metric. So that's part of the connection. Here, that one looks like a J. This one, let's see, that's the y derivative of f, so that's just going to, the y derivative is d, which was a y back then, and so that's going to give us f d, let's see, what was it, a comma b.
So that looks like a J. J A. And this one's some connection thing. So every term in here turns into something that looks like a J, or looks like part of a covariant derivative. And that, essentially what you do then, you get some one form that is built from the original term here, and you define that to be curly J. So, right, so the claim is this turns out to be some one form that depends on J, which we then define to be curly J. Okay, so what this means is that the biconformal Yuan Yang mill is going to be satisfied, if this one is. Let's see, and that's not hard to show at this point, right? What has to happen? Okay, so what has to be true in order to satisfy this theory? Well, okay, df is zero, that's automatic. Starting star f, which is that whole thing in f, has to equal that whole thing in j. Well, it's not too hard to match term by term, to show that the only way to do that is if the divergence of this F equals that J. And that establishes that a biconformal theory of this form is satisfied only if this four-dimensional theory is satisfied. So if star D star of straight F is straight J, then star D star of curly F will be curly J. So that direction of the theorem is sort of by definition. The tricky bit is to go the other way. Suppose I take, I don't make this on glass, I just take some A plus B, some arbitrary potential here, some one point. I take D of it and build a field. And I set star D star F equal to some curly J. If I solve that, does the solution of that necessarily imply some underlying four-dimensional theory like this? Well, no way. not with a Hodge tool. This theory with the Hodge tool, it's an eight-dimensional Yuan Yang theory. There's no reason that an eight-dimensional Yuan Yang theory is going to reduce to a four-dimensional Yuan Yang theory. You've got twice as many fields, twice as many potentials. They're all independent. There might be something magical in this eclectic structure. I don't know, actually, there's that is that makes it reduce. But if instead of using the Hodge dual, you use the symplectic dual, you do get to reduce it. You can actually go backwards. You can start with this theory and get to that. So this statement becomes this and only this. So this theory is satisfied with the symplectic dual, if and only if that theory is satisfied with the Hodge dual.
Why is that again? I know you just said it, but why is that again?
Well, we require a proof, right?
Okay.
So we haven't done the proof.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay.
The proof is on page. Page is over here. 10. Page 10. The general solution.
Okay.
All right, so it's in the. That's the U1 paper, the one I just. Did I just send it to you?
I
think I just sent you those.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah, this is like a Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Okay.
So if we do the Yuan Yang theory in the eight dimensional space, we're
right.
Going to get Maxwell's equations for both positions and momentum, right? Is that correct? Or
positions and momenta of what? All right. Now we're doing a field theory on this symplectic manifold, but U and V can be positions and momenta of some particle, but a field is just a field.
Right.
So
right.
Now we're doing field theory on a symplectic manifold, I guess is a cautious way to say it. And that's a little bit new and different. One thing that we noticed, okay, I can show that you can always put A into this form. This thing, right, G, remember, is the thing in the metric. In fact, is the thing that determines the time-like direction in space-time. So V is always, by definition, a time-like vector because it's the thing that determines what direction time flows in the configuration space. This metric H is a, you know, V alpha V beta minus V squared kind of thing. And suppose, all right, given that, that's a time-like vector, suppose we boost to a frame where V alpha is a unit time-like vector. Okay, then this contraction becomes F zero beta. F zero beta is the conjugate momentum to A in, you know, standard Hamiltonian formulation of electrodynamics. So what's happened here is this this biconformal form of the vector potential is a field plus its conjugate momentum, where the du part is the field and the dy part, the dv part, is its conjugate momentum.
Okay. F has indices down, usually, actually, right? Because it's a two-form?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, so we have that, well, how do we get those indices up? And we're probably using HAB to do that. And so, yeah, this should be revisited in the QV basis. Let's see. That the formulas for the symplectic dual don't involve the metric. So, you know, we don't run into any of these raising and lowering issues like we had over here. Let me show you that what you have to do to define the symplectic dual. Let me define that for you. I don't know if we'll get to the theorem today, but I should show you a little bit about the symplectic dual. Question.
Are the indices right on this F, C, B, comma, C thing on top equals to J? Seem like the indices are funny.
Okay, so I was trying to write F, A, C, comma, C. The cross term is actually the V on F, B, A, comma, C. So an AC cross term is something like this. So I'm looking at that comma C. And the only, all right, this is a V derivative. The only V is there, so that gives a Kronecker DC. So the result of this is to change that V to a C. Then the A and the C remain, so we get that kind of divergence.
And then the J looks, you have like an A down, but there's no A in the F on the top.
This should have been an A, I think. Is that right? So, VA, the V changes to a C. So, that would be an A there. And then I've got a GAB here that lowers it to a JB. So, what turns out, this term is E J to Z.
Oh,
it's minus J. Right, it's because this derivative is hitting only that coefficient.
I'm just trying to match indices.
Oh, okay. Let me do the
Sorry.
Right, we're trying to compute F, the cross term. We want the momentum divergence of the cross term. And this term is the cross term. Right, notice the free indices, where's the cross term here? The free indices on the cross term are those two. So the FAC is a Y dummy index, call it B, F, B, then here's the A comma C, like that. And then this C only sees that Y, so I get a Kronecker CD, F, D, A, comma C. And so this becomes F, C, A, comma.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a C in three different parts now. That's funny, but...
The,
Oh, never mind. Okay, no, that's...
Yes.
Okay. Right, okay.
Okay. So, let me talk a little while about these duals. So let's be in an eight-dimensional black and marble space, but it's some eight-dimensional manifold. So there is, let me see what that hint there. You know, where we've got eight different entities. And so when we take a dual, suppose we have a one form, and let's suppose we have coordinates, xa, that actually, ultimately, that's going to be xa and yb, some up coordinates and some down coordinates, and that's going to get really confusing, having coordinates in different positions, so we need to be a little careful. Suppose I have a one form that is something like dx, d. So an eight-dimensional one form. And if I want to take the Hodge dual of that, what I do is I take the coefficients, a sub b, and I raise the indices with the metric. And then I write a Levy Kubitzer tensor, where the first index here is summed on the other indexes of this metric, and then the remaining indices are contracted on a wedge product of a whole bunch of x's. And in this case, since there are n minus 1 of these, I normalize with n minus 1 factorial. So this number is just the factorial of the number of these that you have. Okay, now, this is the Hodge. The symplectic dual now, I need different notations for these, and they flip between these two papers I sent you guys. I've got to send you these papers too. There's a star and there's an asterisk. So in the first paper, the E1 paper, I was using the star for the Hodge dual and the asterisk for the symplectic dual. Since I was working with the symplectic dual, that seems simple. But that's not standard. Usually an asterisk is the Hodge dual. So in the second paper, I switched. So it's the other way around in the other paper.
Would you type it like backslash star or something?
But
for the actual.
Oh, you know, what did I do for that smallest star? Yeah, there is some symbol like that. There's some. Yeah, if you look at it in Lick, you'll see some backslash thing written out there in one of those versions.
Okay.
I'm not sure where Lick hides that star. I'll have to hunt around it. He's probably got a menu for it somewhere. I'm not sure. But let's use the star for the symbolic tool. Unless we find a better symbol. Then I'm talking about a really general tool and I use the pound sign or something. You know, sharp or slash or whatever. But, okay. So, all you do, the difference, is instead of using the metric, you use the symplectic form. Let's call it symplectic form omega. So everything else is the same. Okay, so far so good. So Hodge dual, symplectic dual. That's clear, but now it gets confusing because two things make this annoying. The first is that we're really using up and down indices, so half of our basis forms have down indices and half have up indices. So when we write something like this, well, really, the Levy theta tensor with all its indices down should have half its indices down and half up, right, if we use the lowercase. So, F1, A, B, you know, through C, is going to look something like F1, A, B, C, D, E, F, something like that, with a bunch of up and a bunch of half up and half down indices, depending on the order. So, what turns out to be the sensible thing to do is to rewrite this as plus or minus epsilon D, E, F through G and A, B, D through H. We can always rearrange the indices on our Levy-Civita tensor. So let's always agree to put them with all of the up indices first and all of the down indices second. As a standard way, well, there are 8 factorial ways of arranging those indices. Here, or, well, in 4 dimensions, or 2n factorial, let's say, ways of writing those indices. Here, since we've introduced this convention, what we get, there are n factorial ways of arranging those and n factorial ways of arranging those. So there are n factorial squares possible. So when we normalize things, we have to take those factors into account.
This A also has both in up and out indices, right? The A.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is an A dx, A up, and then let's call it a B. A, B, pointing down.
Okay.
Where here, you know, at this point, X and Y are just any convenient coordinates. You know, where, whatever coordinates you want. Let's see. I want to assume that X and Y are canonically conjugate coordinates. Anytime we write a form, we're always going to put the Levy-Civita in that form. That may not be the way they show up when we first write this dual. So if we're looking at some form, you know, that's got some up and some down, the first, let's see, so for example, if we had a three form, suppose we had eta is some eta A B C D X A wedge D Y B wedge D X D. Well, that's a non-standard form part. That, you know, suppose we wanted the dual of this thing, the dual of that thing is going to be the dual of all this. So what we have is eta A B C, and now we, on the Levi-Civita, we need to match those three indices as the first three here. So I'm going to put an A up, and I need, or sorry, no, first I need the metric, right? I need a G, A, D. I need a G down, B, E. I need a G up, C, F. And now, the first indices of this have got to be a D down to match that D up, an E up to match the D down, and an F down to match this. And then, I can go ahead and fill this out any way I like with the corresponding things here. Well, rearranging those always gives me a minus sign. Every time I interchange a pair here, I get a minus sign. When I interchange forms, I get a minus sign. So those I can write in any order I want, so I'm going to write the Y first and the X's last for the rest of this. So if we're in eight dimensions, I'm going to write GHI, JK, DYG, DYH, DYI, which DXJ, which DXK. So I'm going to choose these to make at least that much of the epsilon work right. And then I need a 1 over 3 factorial for the y's and a 1 over 2 factorial for the x's. Because I'm not going to take x's past y's any more than I have to. Okay, so far so good. Then I still want to rearrange this thing, so that's going to introduce some signs. So I need to bring F past 1, then a pair JK can come past anything because it's 2. So this Levi-Civita is minus epsilon EGHIDFJ. So I put it in standard form by doing the rearrangement, just the sign as usual for every interchange. Move all the up ones to the left and the down ones to the right. So you just got to build one more rule in your manipulation of symbols.
Okay.
Once you've done this, and if we're in U and V coordinates, where we know that they're involute, there's a Levi-Civita on the n-dimensional submanifold. And this is it. It breaks into two. Because we partition the space into submanifolds, we know there's a Levi-Civita tensor on every manifold of the right dimension. So we know, given the involution of U and V, we're going to be able to write the Levi-Civita as a product of a pair. And then that's really nice. Things start to simplify once you do this. We need to do some examples, but there's another neat thing that happens. Now, what you use in the dual is the Levi-Civita tensor. So upon A, B, C is the to make it a tensor, what you need is the square root of the determinant of the metric times the, let's say, the anti-symmetric symbol. So this is all plus and minus 1. So the totally anti-symmetric symbol is all plus and minus 1s and zeros, and you need a square root of the determinant of the metric to get the to make it tensorial. Well, look what happens here. The metric on this space is minus HAB. The metric on this space is HAB. So what we get, let's continuing this equal sign is, I can write this as root, right, absolute value of the determinant of H inverse for this one, and then eta C through G. And here, root determined absolute value HAB of H, eta A through H. Well, the determinant of the inverse is 1 over the determinant of the thing. Those cancel. So the volume element in biconformal space does not involve a metric. So if you're using the simplistic form to raise and lower indices, and you're working on this pair of submanifolds, there's no metric dependence at all in the tool. This is really nice. Have to go?
I have to go.
Okay, well, that's a good point to go home and ponder. So, you know, that's the real advantage of being on a simplistic manifold. So now we work these out. The other thing that causes a little bit of head scratching, this omega BC has one up and one down index. So if A has a down and you contract with the up, the C is going to be down here. So it's actually going to be putting, the thing that acts as a metric leaves the down index down, which is weird, but correct. The other thing that happens is you get some fine differences in the cross terms. Okay, remember how our two forms, if you're looking at a two form, you know, if you have two down indices on the form or two up indices, okay, you're going to have two omegas, you know, the antisymmetry won't do anything. But if you have one omega up and the other omega down, those are minus one another, and you pick up a minus sign relative to the Hodge tool. So when you form something like a dot product using the symplectic tool, the dot product of cross terms has the opposite sign from expected. And so now these end up looking different because of that. So we'll pick this up. Let's see, I suppose, you know, we might want to do some field theory, you know. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
About the what?
Oh.